Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're diving into a really intriguing question. Is it actually smart to believe in God, even if the evidence isn't, crystal clear?
Yeah, it's a different angle, isn't it?
Definitely. We've got some fascinating ideas to explore, looking at arguments that suggest believing might be the most practical, the wisest path, regardless of definitive proof.
That's a great way to put it. Often, discussions about God's existence get stuck on evidence, proof, logic.
Right.
But what if we flip that? What if we look at the potential benefits of belief itself? That's the realm we're entering today.
Okay, so to get us started, there's this principle that might sound like it shuts down our whole discussion before it even begins. It's from a 19th century thinker, William Clifford.
Yes, Clifford.
He declared that it's always wrong everywhere and for anyone to believe anything on insufficient evidence. When you first hear that, it resonates, right?
Right.
It sounds reasonable.
Totally. I mean, who doesn't want their beliefs to be well supported? That principle speaks to that desire for intellectual honesty, accuracy. It sets a high bar.
And unsurprisingly, religious skeptics, Clifford included, really grabbed onto this. They argued that belief in God, well, it inherently lacks that solid evidence.
So for them, believing wasn't just unsupported, it was irrational. Maybe even morally wrong, according to that principle.
Exactly. What do you make of that initial challenge?
It's a powerful one. It really puts theistic belief on the defensive, demanding this, undeniable proof, or else it's baseless.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Some thinkers have actually turned that very principle around, they've asked. Is there sufficient evidence for Clifford's principle itself?
Oh, the self-refutation argument.
Right. I mean, what kind of proof could you even offer to definitively say that you should always believe only when you have enough evidence? It feels a bit
like a snake eating its own tail.
Yeah. What would even count as sufficient evidence for a rule about sufficient evidence? It highlights the difficulty in setting these absolute rules about belief without maybe undermining them in the process. Exactly. And this is where the pragmatic arguments start to look appealing. They kind of sidestep the whole evidence or bust debate and focus on the practical wisdom of believing.
Mm-hmm.
And two figures really stand out here, Blaise Pascal and William James. Let's start with Pascal. He was a 17th century genius, mathematician, philosopher.
Incredible mind.
He was working on this big project called Thoughts or Pensées, a sort of defense of religious belief. And tucked away in his notes was this idea we now call Pascal's wager.
Yes, the wager. That's a classic for a reason. Pascal starts by acknowledging that, look, the evidence for or against God might seem, 50-50, inconclusive.
Right. You can't be totally sure either way based just on the evidence you have.
Exactly. So in that situation, Pascal says you have to make a choice anyway. You have to place a bet, a wager on whether God exists or not. You can't just sit it out.
Okay. So he lays out the four possible scenarios. If you choose to believe God exists, and it turns out God does exist.
Infinite happiness. Eternal bliss. The ultimate win. Jackpot.
The jackpot. Right. Now, if you believe, but God doesn't exist, what's the downside?
Well, maybe you went to church sometimes, resisted a few temptations. Pascal sees it as a pretty mild inconvenience, a finite loss at worst.
Seems reasonable. Okay, other side of the coin. You choose not to believe, and oops, God does exist.
Infinite unhappiness.
Hell.
The ultimate loss. Yeah. Really bad outcome.
The worst possible outcome. But if you don't believe, and God also doesn't exist.
Well, maybe you had a bit more earthly fun, indulged a little more, a small finite gain, perhaps.
So when you lay it out like that, Pascal's conclusion is pretty forceful. It's just plain rational prudential to bet on God.
Because the potential reward, infinite happiness, is just so astronomically huge compared to the minimal downside if you're wrong.
He uses that analogy, right? Why bet $1 million just to win two when you could bet $2 for a chance to win $1 million?
Exactly. Even if you think the odds of the God horse winning aren't great, that massive potential payout makes it the only sensible bet. The infinite gain dwarfs any finite loss, and the potential infinite loss outweighs any finite gain. It's cost-benefit on a cosmic scale.
Now, naturally, this hasn't gone unchallenged. People have pushed back. Lycan and Schlesinger wrote an article defending the wager, tackling some common objections.
Right, you bet your life. Good piece.
One big objection is, belief isn't like flipping a switch. You can't just decide to believe something, right? Like, if I offered you $1 million right now to truly believe, you don't see my hand raised while I'm raising it.
Yeah, good luck with that. It's a very natural objection. You can't just will yourself into belief instantly.
So how do defenders like Lycan and Schlesinger respond?
They acknowledge the immediate difficulty, But they argue that over the long run, many beliefs, including religious ones, can be influenced. They point to William James, who we'll discuss more later, suggesting a kind of, well, behavior therapy.
Behavior therapy, how so?
James's idea was basically, act as if you believe. Go to church, pray, read the scriptures, engage with the community. Over time, through these actions, genuine belief might actually follow.
Ah, so it's not instant belief, but cultivating it. They use that example, don't they, about learning to love jazz for a $50,000 reward.
Exactly. You might hate jazz now, but with that incentive, you might start listening, going to clubs, learning about it, and eventually you might genuinely come to appreciate and even love it. Your preferences and perhaps beliefs can shift through engagement.
So the idea is you start the actions associated with belief, prompted by the wager, and maybe genuine belief grows out of that.
Precisely. It's an indirect path. You can't force belief now, but your actions and habits can shape it over time.
Okay. Another big critique is that the whole wager feels a bit cynical. Mercenary, even.
Yeah, like you're just trying to game the system for divine reward points.
Right. Would God really reward belief based solely on self-interest, on hedging your bets?
That's a fair point. Lycan and Schlesinger suggest that even if the initial motivation is self-interest prompted by the wager, that doesn't preclude developing a more sincere, genuine faith later. The wager might just be the catalyst, the foot in the door that leads to a deeper relationship and love for God.
Kind of like starting a job just for the money, but eventually finding real satisfaction or purpose in the work itself.
That's a decent analogy, yeah. The starting point doesn't necessarily define the end point of your journey.
Okay. What about the odds? Pascal kind of starts with this 50-50 idea, but many people today would say atheism seems far more likely than theism. Does that kill the wager?
Lycan and Schlesinger argue no. Because of the infinite potential payoff of theism, even if you assign it a very low probability, say 1 in 1,000,000, the expected value calculation still massively favors betting on God.
Ah, because infinity multiplied by even a tiny probability is still infinite, whereas any finite gain from atheism, even with high probability, remains finite.
Exactly. That infinite stakes element really dominates the calculation, regardless of how you tweak the probabilities, as long as the probability isn't zero. Think back to the horse race. Even a tiny chance at an infinite payout beats a near certainty of a tiny payout.
Right. Okay. But then there's the really tricky one. The many gods objection.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which god are you wagering on? There are thousands of religions, different concepts of God, different afterlives.
So betting on the generic god of Pascal's wager doesn't really help if you pick the wrong specific one, does it? You might end up in the wrong afterlife anyway.
That's a serious challenge.
Yeah.
Lycan and Schlesinger offer a few pointers. They suggest looking at, well, any empirical or historical evidence that might favor one tradition over others. You might also consider the nature of the afterlife described. Is it even desirable?
Okay, so try to narrow it down a bit.
And then they add a slightly more strategic point. Consider the tolerance level of different traditions.
Tolerance level, how does that factor in?
Well, if you're motivated by the wager's logic, maximizing potential gain and minimizing potential loss, you might pay closest attention to those traditions that are more exclusive or intolerant regarding belief.
Why? That sounds counterintuitive.
Because if those traditions are right, the cost of not believing in their specific God could be the infinite loss Pascal warned about. A more tolerant tradition might be less risky if you get it wrong. So the high-stakes, intolerant traditions might demand more urgent consideration under the wager's own logic.
Wow, okay. That's a pragmatic but maybe uncomfortable way to look at it. Focus on the ones with the biggest potential downside if you ignore them.
It adds another layer of complexity. They even mention that your own cultural upbringing might naturally steer you towards certain options, creating a kind of wager within a wager. Which specific god within the realm of plausible options for you should you bet on?
Fascinating. So it's not just a simple flip between theism and atheism. Okay, that's Pascal's wager. Now let's shift gears to William James and the will to believe.
A very different but related pragmatic argument.
James was late 19th century, started as a physician, became a hugely influential psychologist, and then gained deeply into religious studies.
Right. Author of Principles of Psychology, The Varieties of Religious Experience. Really foundational stuff. And despite his empiricist background, he grew more sympathetic to religious belief over time.
And his key idea here is that reason isn't the only player in the belief game. Our will, our desires, emotions, hopes also plays a crucial role.
Yes, especially when reason alone can't settle the matter. He argued that our passional nature, as he called it, can and sometimes must step in.
He makes these useful distinctions about the choices we face. First, living versus dead. Does the option even appeal to you? Does it feel like a real possibility?
For many, belief in God is definitely a living option. It has emotional resonance.
Then forced versus avoidable. Can you just not choose? Sit on the fence indefinitely?
James says no, not really, when it comes to God. Withholding belief, choosing agnosticism, is still taking a stance. You lose the potential benefits of belief just as surely as an atheist does. So the choice is forced.
And finally, momentous versus trivial. Is the choice a big deal?
Undeniably.
Yeah.
The implications of God's existence or non-existence are huge. So belief in God is typically a momentous choice.
So James's point is, when you face a genuine option, one that's living, forced, and momentous, and it cannot be decided on intellectual grounds alone, the evidence is inconclusive.
Then your passional nature, your will, your hopes, your desire for certain outcomes not only may decide, but according to James, it must decide. You can't wait forever for proof that might never come, especially when inaction has consequences.
Yeah, this directly clashes with Clifford's rule, doesn't it? Clifford would say, hold on, wait for the evidence.
Exactly. Clifford demands you withhold assent until the evidence is sufficient. James pushes back hard against that.
How does James counter Clifford?
He basically argues that a rule of thinking like Clifford's, which might prevent you from acknowledging certain kinds of truths, if those truths exist, would itself be irrational.
Okay, unpack that a bit.
James suggests some truths might just be structured such that they require a leap of faith before the evidence becomes clear. Or maybe, due to our human limits, some truths never get conclusive empirical evidence.
So, rigidly applying Clifford's rule might actually block you from accessing certain realities.
Precisely. It prioritizes avoiding error above all else, potentially at the cost of missing out on vital truths. James argues that sometimes the risk of being wrong is outweighed by the potential gain of finding truth, especially momentous truth.
And James makes an even broader point, doesn't he? That faith isn't just a religious thing. It's unavoidable for everyone.
Absolutely crucial point. He argues we all operate on faith commitments constantly, whether we realize it or not.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Well, think about the basic principle of causality that every effect has a cause. David Hume famously argued, you can't strictly prove this through observation. You just see events following other events. Yet, we fundamentally believe in cause and effect to make sense of the world.
Okay, that's a big one. What else?
The uniformity of nature. Your belief that the laws of physics will work tomorrow, just like they did today. That the sun will rise. You expect it based on past experience. But it's still an inductive leap, a kind of faith. There's no absolute guarantee.
I never thought of the sun rising as an act of faith, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
Or even something as basic as believing you're awake right now and not in some incredibly vivid dream. Can you prove it beyond any possible doubt? Probably not.
Descartes' demon territory.
Yeah.
And maybe the most compelling one, the problem of other minds. You firmly believe that I have thoughts, feelings, consciousness, right? But you've never directly experienced my mind.
No, I just infer it from your behavior, your words.
Yeah.
It's an argument from analogy, really.
And philosophers point out it's actually a pretty weak analogy based on just one case, your own consciousness. Yet we all live our lives with this fundamental faith that other people aren't just complex automatons.
Wow. So even the most hardcore atheist is operating with numerous faith commitments just to navigate daily life. That's James's punchline. Faith, in this broader sense, is a basic, necessary part of the human condition. You can't function without it.
So if faith is unavoidable anyway...
Then why, James asks, should religious faith be automatically excluded or seen as uniquely irrational? If you're already making these leaps of faith about causality, nature, other minds, why not seriously consider the possibility of faith in God, especially if it's a living, forced, momentous option for you and potentially offers significant practical benefits or helps make sense of your existence?
It reframes the whole discussion, moving it away from proof and towards reasonable commitments in the face of uncertainty.
Exactly. It acknowledges the limits of reason and the necessary role of our, well, our whole selves, including our will and emotions, informing the beliefs we live by.
So to wrap this up then, we've looked at these two major pragmatic arguments. Pascal's wager, focusing on the prudential calculation of infinite stakes.
And James's will to believe, emphasizing the necessity and legitimacy of faith when facing genuine options that reason alone can't decide.
And the key takeaway is that neither is about proving God exists in a scientific or purely logical sense.
No, they're about the rationality or wisdom of choosing to believe, given the practical realities of human life, our limitations, and the nature of the choices before us.
Which leaves us and our listeners with a final thought to mull over. Given that we all, yourself included, operate with foundational beliefs held essentially by faith.
Like belief in causality or other minds.
Are there perhaps practical benefits, or is it at least a reasonable option, to consider theistic belief as another one of those fundamental commitments, even without definitive, universally accepted proof?
It really encourages you to think about your own framework for belief, rationality, and the role faith already plays in your life, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Something profound to consider. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.